I don't see a concrete way for the open source community to do this without having paid maintainers that are supported by professional security operations centers. I don't believe you can have security without professionalization of maintenance and sustainable open source communities around projects. There's no security without sustainability of open source.
Hi, this is Brian Douglas, and you're listening to Open Source Ready, a bi-weekly series where we discuss the evolution of open source software and its impact on the tech landscape. Along with my co-host John McBride, we'll explore topics like open source AI, the business, and the life and sustainability of open source. Open Source Ready is brought to you by HeavyBit, the leading investor of developer-first startups. For more information, visit HeavyBit.com. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic, find us at x.com/opensourceready.
Welcome to another installment of Open Source Ready. John is back from KubeCon. John, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Still here in Salt Lake City, but it's a beautiful day. Happy to be calling in. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing well, and I'm hoping that folks will catch your talk at the event tomorrow or specifically on the recording. But I actually want to introduce our guest, who is Toby Langel. Toby, calling in from Switzerland, I believe. How you doing, Toby?
From Geneva, Switzerland. Yes, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited about this whole conversation we're going to have.
Yeah. So like I've crossed paths with you a few times when I was at GitHub. I think you had spoke to a few open source maintainers and I was in the background listening. We were actually at Open UK early this year. We both gave a talk there.
We did.
And that's the first time I think I met you face to face. But you've done a lot of work in open source, in and around open source. Do you want to introduce yourself? Tell us what you're doing. What's your background?
Sure, absolutely. First, I do want to state that it is quite surprising to think that Open UK was earlier this year.
Yeah.
It feels like, I don't know, 5 years ago or something. Like there's this time distortion going on. So I started a career as a software front-end web developer completely by accident now quite a long time ago. I was actually a professional jazz musician. And we were touring and we were trying to like figure out like how each of the band members could, you know, help the band. And my brother was really good at computers. And so I thought, I'm going to ask him if he can teach me how to build a website. And so he showed me the LAMP stack and I loved it like right away. Like, I had a scientific background in school and then just clicked, right? It was like, I really enjoyed myself. And so I built this website, an online shop where you could order a CD and like it would send it to you. And then every musician in town came to me and said, hey, Toby, could you build one for us too? And so, as a professional jazz musician, I was entirely broke, obviously. So I thought, oh, this is a great potential side gig. And right about that time, Ruby on Rails got started and it was kind of like, oh, this is, the perfect tool to sort of like build a SaaS around this idea of like building websites for musicians. And, as I started playing into it, I discovered the whole JavaScript libraries that did this, Scriptaculous, this great effects that you could do. And I just like completely fell in love with the whole thing and essentially learned JavaScript by documenting the prototype JavaScript framework, then started co-maintaining it. And that's kind of like how I got into tech. And then from there, worked at Facebook because they were looking for someone that knew open source well and that knew web standards. And I was fairly familiar with both. Then did more standardization work and then sort of came back to open source, but more from a sort of like strategic business angle than from a developer angle. So I still code, but mostly for myself. Now, essentially what I do is strategic consulting. And I do that mostly for tech companies, but also increasingly for nonprofits and more sort of like governmental-ish work. So really operating in that space at this point.
Yeah. I had a great conversation with you, which I loved to have on this podcast in regards to government. Cause like we just went through early this year, this vulnerability with the FTP vulnerability. Do you want to explain for the listeners who may be not aware of that? Like maybe if they were not paying attention to Microsoft and Postgres at the moment, what happened then? And like your involvement in that Obviously, you didn't disclose the vulnerability or attack anything, but yeah.
Right. So I wasn't directly involved with XEUtils, right? But you know, the high level story of XEUtils is someone who got in the position of being a trusted maintainer of a project turned out to have an agenda that wasn't at all the one you would expect from a trusted maintainer of a project. And the way that person got into that position is essentially by leveraging the fact that maintainers are overworked and burnt out and aren't properly supported to maintain the projects that we all rely on. And as a result, was kind of bullied into or pushed into accepting someone as a co-maintainer on the project who had bad intentions. And so, you know, this kind of social engineering attack, right, is a pattern that the industry has seen for a long time, but it's like it's the first time that it shows up like so blatantly in an open source project, right? So the idea of getting the ability to live attack a project like this rather than have a vulnerability that is not managed, you know, like a bug that is leveraged, right? Like having someone who's in a position to essentially create backdoors, that's something that it, you know, was entirely new. And so as a board member and as cross-project council vice chair of the OpenJS Foundation, I was involved closely in what looks like a similar attempt against the foundation that was disclosed by OpenJS in collaboration with OpenSSF in a blog post, I would say maybe a couple of months after the XEUtils made the news, which had a similar pattern, right? And you know, without going into the specifics of the details of this, what I found really, really interesting and so sort of what converges with the talk I gave on funding open source maintenance at Open UK that we were talking about earlier is the fact that when cybersecurity incidents or social engineering attempts at penetrating like an organization happen, regular businesses know what to do, at least the savvy ones, right? And have like a security operations center and like, a bunch of processes and a bunch of practices of how to manage such a threat and then how to investigate it and then how to go to, the authorities with that information and seek help and support, right? What we discovered in the process of managing a similar situation as an open source, a set of open source projects as an open source foundation, is that open source by its very nature isn't structured in a way where there is a central, security operations center that controls the network in which all of the software is built and that controls the development machines and that just maintainers can turn to ask for help or to ask for investigation, right? And we ended up in a situation where no one really knew what to do, right? Essentially because, expectations from government agencies were that, well, someone would do an investigation internally and show up with data and like pointers to what had happened, right? And well, we had no one to do this, obviously, right? And plus, it's not like you can go onto the machines of like maintainers across the world and try to figure out what exactly happened because you just don't have access to them, right? And so to me, that really showed, not only, work that needs to be done by everyone to sort of like bridge that gap and figure out solutions, right? But also, and I think I explained a lot of this in the Five Questions to Five Experts article that I was invited to talk about this in. But yeah, it really shows not only that we're, we have all of these processes and things to figure out, but also that if open source becomes a stepping stone to getting inside of valuable targets where those open source projects are used, then we pretty much are going to have to build security practices that are similar to what those organizations already do to protect themselves. And I don't see a concrete way for the industry and the open source community to do this without having paid maintainers that are supported by professional security operations centers. And so, you know, these two things that have been at the sort of heart of my work for the last years, open source sustainability and then securing the supply chain, kind of like collide, right? Where I don't believe you can have security without professionalization of maintenance and sustainable open source communities around projects. So that's kind of really, for me, like the two big learnings are those, right? Like security and sustainability, like there's no security without sustainability of open source. And we collectively have to figure out the governance structures and the structures and the processes to deal with threats of that nature in the future.
John, maybe you can help me out, because I remember that specifically early this year, there was like a Go library that was like basically feature complete, and everyone was very concerned on like who owns the keys. And I don't know if you remember that from, was it late last year or early this year?
Was it Gorilla?
Was that the Mux, under the Mux project?
Yeah.
That was the one.
Yeah. So what happened there was something similar where, you know, they were looking for new maintainers, having a hard time finding new maintainers. And this was a like HTTP routing library in Go that was used all over the place. And he essentially was just going to shut it down and kind of sunset the whole thing because, you know, who was going to, you know, get the actual keys to the kingdom of this? Thankfully, Red Hat stepped in and, kind of like Toby was saying, really like professionalized and kind of centralized the maintenance of that library, probably because they use it throughout their products. Something that was crazy to me about the scale of the XC Utilities attack was really the amount of time, you know, because this person, Jiatan, took years to gain that trust. And then a lot of the commentary is also that this probably wasn't a solo individual. It was probably a group of nation state actors backed by some government or something to make this possible and then create a ridiculous SSH backdoor. So Toby, my question around that is like, what kind of scale do you envision, you know, needing to be achieved in the open source to combat the kind of scale that is, you know, now clear around these kind of social engineering attacks?
The angle that I use and that I used in the talk that I gave, again, I'm re-referring the $1 billion for open source maintainers talk, is the opposite, right? I look at it from the opposite side of the lens. And the way I look at this is, if you do, you know, sort of back of the envelope math on how much, you know, worldwide we collectively spend on software engineering per year on paying essentially software engineers' wages, it is roughly $1 trillion, right? And so when you take 0.1% of $1 trillion, you get $1 billion, right? And 0.1% is not a lot, right? But $1 billion is a lot of money. And, you know, so you know, that's one way of looking at it. And then the second number that I just bring up is, you know, the size of the open source stack in ship products, which is roughly, depending on how you count, 75 to like 90 or something. It doesn't matter. It's like way more than half, right? And now, you know, when you combine this idea that 0.1% is $1 billion, and it sounds like a huge amount of money, right? And that, you know, it would be crazy for the open source community to say it would be useful to pay for maintainers, right? Yet the stack is like 80% open source. You know, the real way of looking at the problem is saying, if things were more reasonable, what would it look like, right? And so if like, you know, being reasonable is taking 0.1% of what is spent on software engineering every year to support 80% of what is like being shipped, that would essentially pay for something like 10,000 maintainers, right? You know, or maybe let's say 8,000 plus like, you know, management support training, you know, like offsites, whatever, right? And can you just imagine what that would do? Like, even if you suddenly had 1,000 professionals professional trained maintainers supported by security experts focused on like the, 10,000 most used libraries in the world. Like it would be huge, right? It would entirely change everything. And so that's the angle to look at because we don't really know. It's like, you know, it's really hard to say upfront, here's what's needed. I'm seeing, you know, the Sovereign Tech Fund makes such a huge difference with, you know, tiny investments. Like at the OpenJS Foundation, we were very lucky to get like a really big amount of support from Sovereign Tech Fund. And I mean, you know, it's like really big compared to like the fund, but we're talking less than $1 million roughly. I mean, I don't exactly remember the numbers and I think they're public, but you know, we're talking about like that kind of money and the amount of like good that did for the security and the practices of the organization, like huge, right? And when we had this Utils-like threat, we were able to get direct support through that fund and the security person we had as support. And it was huge to have someone that was knowledgeable, had the contacts, knew how the things worked, and was able to just like walk us through it. So imagine like that on the scale of like 100 or 1,000 for the whole industry, like long-term. Wow.
Yeah, part of me wonders if it's even more than that. I had a very interesting conversation with a maintainer here at KubeCon about some, you know, piece of Kubernetes infrastructure they built in the open source. And, you know, this is one maintainer with one project, but by some estimates of things that, you know, he's been looking at, there's like some, you know, many billions of dollars of business flowing through this one piece of software, you know, on top of all this Kubernetes that he maintains. And has had a hard time maintaining this and having a hard time finding funding for his time to actually work on it. So yeah, the magnitude of scale around this are pretty mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? When you look at the numbers, it doesn't make sense that we're struggling to just provide very basic support, you know, where the end game is obvious. Now, I do really believe that the legislative push that we're seeing both in Europe and in the U.S. is going to be a turning moment for this. It's going to make or break it.
Yeah. Could you speak on the pushes on legislation? Because I'm not sure if folks have been paying attention that closely. Because I know like the DoD in the U.S. have some requirements coming up in the future around SBOMs and et cetera.
Yeah. And I mean, I looked at the U.S. push from a bit more of a distance because it is, you know, in the way it is driven through the industry, different and probably a little more lightweight than what Europe is doing with the Cyber Resilience Act, the CRA. And so I'm more familiar with the European side also because I'm directly involved in it. The CRA is essentially a set of obligations and requirements for compliance. To be able to place something on the European market, you want to have to be able to demonstrate that you comply to a large number of security requirements. And, you know, of course, the process of you know, getting that, writing that law up kind of bumped into, oh, and there was open source, right? At some point. And that was like kind of like a shock to everyone on all sides of the equation. And, you know, at first, how it was addressed was incredibly concerning. But then folks on both sides did some amazing work and some, you know, amazing collaboration. And frankly, came up with legislation that I think is, frankly, like surprisingly good when you look at like the complexity of the problem. And what happens is that there's a clear understanding that the liability and the compliance requirement falls on the people who are actually building software and, you know, and building products using software, not on the open source community itself, right? But it is also quite clear that without the open source community collaborating with the folks who are actually shipping products, it's going to be impossible for the folks shipping products to comply with the legal requirements. And so, you know, was this, you really have like the incentives for people to work together and essentially sort of like fund the fact that it is necessary to shift security considerations left. And to some degree, like either that's going to work out and is going to generate support either directly through government funding or through other means. Like there's in the European CRA, there's a provision for a system of attestations that open source stewards, so essentially code hosting foundations, but not only, could leverage to essentially attest that the security aspects of the software that they're providing and could somehow monetize those attestations. And so I think we're going to see some form of brokerage happening through means, you know, some through mechanisms of that nature. So I think that there's a forcing function now, right? And I think it's going to, you know, either like work out or it's going to explode. But I don't see this going like this for a long time without like some pretty drastic changes. Maybe I'm just optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be more top of mind because the CRA stuff, I got wind of that earlier this summer and got to digging in on that stuff. And even at OpenSauce, we had like doubled down and tried to support some of that in our product. You mentioned NASA in passing. And like, John, you told me a story of like folks reaching out to projects you maintain, asking for S-bombs and like all these requirements where you just weren't prepared for. Like, John, do you want to share your background, your open source journey and how you've been exposed to this?
Yeah, sure. So I've maintained a library called SPF 13 Cobra, which, you know, is a very, very mature Go library for bootstrapping command line interfaces. It's been around for a long time. It's kind of become ubiquitous in the Go community. But every once in a while, I do get a strange email or a strange request that, you know, often revolves around like, hey, we need you to like fix some vulnerability that's like way deep in the dependency chain of this thing. Or we need you to supply some sort of like certificate of origin around like all these libraries, an SBOM, et cetera, et cetera. And I did get an email from NASA about this. And I think a lot of people in the Kubernetes community got the same email about providing some kind of SBOM. And it was very bizarre because like I was not at the time well equipped enough to like be like, what do you want? Like there's the Go mod file and the Go sum. Like that tells you what's in this library. Go look at that. But I think what some of these enterprises, some of these government agencies are really looking for is kind of that almost assurance and kind of like you said, Toby, kind of shifting left and maybe putting some more of that responsibility on the open source developer and maintainer, which I just don't think many people in the open source are well equipped at all for.
Well, I also think that like it's not for them to do that. I mean, at the heart of the open source contract, there is the software is provided as is, right? Like, that's the contract, right? The contract isn't, I'm going to do this for free, and then I'm going to now be liable for like you being compliant to something that I have no idea what it is for no money, right? I mean, it's like, that just doesn't compute. So I don't want to fault the organizations who are trying to comply to legislation that is being forced upon them for good reasons. Like you know, to be very clear, I am 100% supportive of legislation that is making software more secure, improve its privacy, etc., because those are things that without government mandate is impossible to have organizations to focus on. I mean, this is just like we have laws and like governments for a reason. And one of the reason is that there are things that was outlaws in government just never happened because like the market incentives just like don't align, right? Things that we care about that don't happen because the market incentives don't align. So I'm 100% for this. I think it's great. However, folks who need to comply to this suddenly are faced with, you know, these whole areas that are just not structured in the way that their process is designed to handle, right? So the way you handle this is, well, you use something from a third party and that third party like sells that thing to you or licenses it to you. And it comes with a bunch of like, you know, meets a bunch of legal requirements. It has a, you know, an SLA and like there's a bunch of things that comes with it, right? And suddenly you're like, oh, but 3/4 of like what we depend on are like, you know, these odd licenses and like there's no one when we pick up the phone. Like, where is that, you know? Where's the service agreement contract? Like, who's the person that we can call when there's a problem? And so I don't think you can, I mean, you know, show it's obviously funny to mock these situations because they're kind of, they're cute, right? But at the same time, like, you know, it's just like, that's how the whole economy and the whole system is structured. And the open source, the open innovation model is new, right? It's not like how the rest of the world functions. And now we have to account for it. So, you know, it's kind of normal that the go-to reaction is, well, let's make them do this. I mean, roughly speaking, there is no way that we can have a, and it makes no sense to have a stack where everyone is securing things and all of their dependencies and their transitive dependencies downstream, right? Doesn't make any sense. It's absurd. The whole point of open source, the whole point of collectively scratching our itches together is to avoid this problem, right? So, you know, 100% this has to be upstream, but it has to be funded, right? And the funding either needs to be sort of like driven, you know, collectively towards maintainers, or it needs to be state supported, or it's going to get vendored, right? You're going to have some vendors that are going to say, well, you know, we secure these whole pipelines and we do the legwork and we sell you a vendored open source project or project collective with a license that is not an open source license, right? Like the license has all of these guarantees that comes with it. And all of these, you know, all of these different options are perfectly fine. I suspect we'll see combinations that are driven by, you know, what kind of usage of those projects you're looking at, you know, where they sit in the stack, whether they're more into defense contracts or depending on kind of the industry, the risk profile, etc. But we'll need to see some combination of all of this stuff, because if not, I mean, you know, the idea that like a random maintainer should be able to provide all of these different attestations and docs for free and have just the time to pick up the phone and answer these requests or answer emails, that's absurd. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And you mentioned like state funded and vendor like funded like solutions. Like folks I've seen a lot of folks working towards this. As we're winding down, because I want to get us to picks and round up the conversation, we're actually working on a newsletter. So like a lot of the stuff we'll have linked in the newsletter, also the show notes, some of the links that you mentioned earlier with the 5x5 questions, stuff like that. We'll have that in the show notes for folks. So definitely check that on HeavyBit. But two things I was going to mention. So came across like my inbox, Department of Homeland Security in the U.S. specifically has a call for proposal for, it's like a $1.7 million contract for companies to solve the SBOM, but also the sort of like the problem where John had folks trying to request this information. I don't know where that's going to go, but this one of the shout out to anybody who's in that space, that's available for folks. And then I don't know if you saw GitHub Secure OSS fund that was announced like a month ago, or maybe it was only a few weeks ago.
I did see it, yes.
Yeah, so I think it's still pretty early. It might not be a fully formed thought yet, but I definitely would love to have the GitHub team on the podcast to talk more about this. But the idea is like, pay folks to secure open source and give them the funding to actually set up their projects for success. It's a TLDR. There's probably a lot more context that will be added to that in the future.
I mean, look, like I just want to interject here because I think it's important. Like we need to try stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like there's no silver bullet. There is going to be a combination of different things that like end up making this sustainable and workable. And we just need to try stuff. And like some things are going to work for some communities or some projects and others for others. And so, you know, folks should just try stuff. So I'm all for like, you know, any kind of experimentation in that space right now, we should do.
Excellent. Well, I would ask you a question, Toby, which is, are you ready to read?
Okay.
Excellent. John, are you ready to read?
As always.
Reads.
I've got some reads that I'll have one that I'll share now, and then one I'll put to you, which I mentioned earlier before we hit record, Toby. But we specifically, OpenSauce, so John and I both worked at OpenSauce. We actually have, as of today, we're acquired by the Linux Foundation. So vision still continues forward. We're going to help the Linux Foundation solve some problems in getting intelligent insights into not only just GitHub repos, but also Linux distros and et cetera. So we're going to continue that vision over there. So John's going to lead AI and infrastructure. I'm going to manage some developer experience for the LFX platform. But open source will continue. We have a blog post on our blog and a LinkedIn post as well if folks want to dig in there and find out more details if you are an open source user. But wanted to share that because that's a read. Definitely read that. I had a read about the Swiss government releasing its software as open source and the requirements. And with you being in Geneva, Toby, I wanted to get your feedback on this because you might have more context.
Yeah, I do have more context because I actually read the law, right? So I don't know when this came out. I don't know. It was like a bunch of weeks ago. And, you know, everyone was like, oh, Toby, you're Swiss. Like, you must be so excited, right? And I went to look at it. And so the backstory is one of the cantons, so Swiss cantons, like Switzerland is like the super tiny country that is structured from a government perspective, exactly like, well, very close to the US, right? It's like, we're a bunch of like tiny states, we're called cantons, and we have like a federal government. So one of those tiny cantons created open source software as part of like an agreement they had with like some supplier and made that open source and shipped it. And they got sued by a company that builds that kind of software in Switzerland, right? Who was like, oh, this is an anti-competitive practice. You're essentially like ruining the economy, blah, 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 right? And so that went to court. And as a result, they formalized in the law the fact that it is illegal for government to create open source, right? And so there is no mandate at all. This is not what the law text says at all. It says essentially like, you know, other parties cannot sue a government, a Swiss government or a canton government if it wants to release open source. And it even says in the legal text, granted that doing so respects the intellectual property rights of the party that has created the software, right? So this is not at all what people believe it is, unfortunately, right?
Wow. That's amazing because, yeah, honestly, I'm glad you gave us the real news on that and read the law because I was still going by the headline.
Oh, yeah, everyone is. I know.
Even reading all the blog posts, yeah, it's like kind of unreal, but I guess you kind of have to read on the other side of the box for stuff like this.
I think like there's a small insight in there, which is we all tend to really hear the part that we want to hear when we read stuff, right? And, you know, it's like, oh, this is exciting, like, you know, a legal mandate for open source. Right? And then we all run with it because it's cool and it's sort of like, it's well aligned with our belief system and what we think is right and what we think is good. And then we, you know, sort of like stop there, right? Don't dig further. And like, there wasn't a lot to dig. I think the main article itself, like I, because I was in German, I don't really read German that well at all. Like I was taught in school, like I'm really bad at it. So I put it into Google Translate and it was just spelled out in the like last paragraph quite clearly, right? So it like played to the music that we wanted to listen to.
Yeah, it makes sense. There's a lot of that going on right now in the
yeah, I'm sorry.
The global political sphere.
Yes, let's say it's global.
Yeah, excellent. John, you had a read you want to share?
Yeah, sure. So it's a short read on Spotify creating a SaaS product for Backstage, which if people aren't familiar, Backstage is a sort of developer portal for discovery of services and ownership and has all these plugins and integrations and is a really awesome, awesome project and can really help big orgs, you know, work across tons of teams and tons of services. Red Hat also has something, some kind of service for this, but I think it's more like on-prem focused for a developer portal. I just find this fascinating because for years people have been asking about, you know, is Spotify going to become essentially a B2B business where, you know, obviously Spotify is more a consumer product, but it seems that they are finally entering the enterprise business realm with a portal for Backstage. It's very, very interesting to see where this goes.
I'm speechless about this news. It seems like so different than what their, you know, regular business is.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I find so fascinating about it is like such a 180, right? But I mean, it's a great product and they built Backstage internally. So if somebody was going to SaaSify it, they got it, right?
Who knows? You know, maybe it's going to be their main source of revenue in a couple of years, right?
It's not too far off from like Facebook and now being in the VR goggle game because like I'm not updating my status feed. I know you spent some time there in early days, but like Meta is a completely different company than how I engage with it than when I did in college, for sure. So maybe Spotify has an out in the future.
You could say the same thing for Amazon. Like, you know, Amazon was retail and now Amazon is cloud. Like AWS is that entire business, basically. Retail, and you know, I'm sure some people are going to fight me about this, but retail and Audible and the rest of their businesses basically serve to, you know, use Amazon Web Services right under the hood. So,
I mean, it's a really big chunk of the revenue, right? For sure. But like the rest of it is quite profitable too, you know, and the whole logistics aspect and the whole marketplace, all of that stuff is highly profitable.
My takeaway is to go read the latest revenue report for AWS from this.
There we go. That's my read. I came without a read. Now I have one.
Quick read, just some light reading over the weekend. Well, with that, Toby, thanks for much talking about open source standards, your exposure into the space. I feel educated by the Swiss government and their sort of, I guess, validation in open source at this point. And listeners, stay ready.
That's all the time we have for today. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic, find us at x.com/opensourceready. Open Source Ready is brought to you by HeavyBit, the leading investor of developer-first startups. For more information, visit HeavyBit.com.